Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Side Podcast. It is indeed a show about Black science fiction and fantasy, helping us to stay on the same page as a family. Today, for episode 122, we'll be discussing stories in Africa Risen. This is a part of an ongoing series covering stories from the anthology. So this is week 4 of Africa Risen. As always, you don't have to read, you don't have to watch, you just listen to us and do your thing. Patrons, do your thing. 21, we want to shout out those patrons, those people that give $1, $2, in some cases $5 a month to keep this podcast produced and bringing y'all fresh content. Thank you so much for supporting us. Special shout out to let me zoom in. Lily Valladares, Kayla Ward, Jenica Hamill, Charity Kerrigan, Maya, Simone A, Valencia Bowden, Felicia Rebecca, Savannah Shepherd, and Kara Grossman. Please roll up on Patreon streets. If I did not say your name correctly, I will re-say it. Speaking of the Patreon, Ben, you gave the patrons a little bit of a treat this week, yeah?
I did, yeah. So I didn't want to post it to any other social media website because of the backlash, but basically Wild has figured out that a binky can go in other people's mouths as well. So she started to like stick it in my mouth and she thinks it's fucking hilarious. So she like has been putting the binky in my mouth and I've been taking, you know, like letting her do that to amuse her. And so I just posted, you know, her being silly and just being absolutely hilarious.
People
that
will report you, you know, so that's
yeah,
fair.
I was like, I guess germs or, but I was like, she's my kid. Like we're a closed contamination system. We're like, you know, like I spit in your mouth.
Oh, no. not even in my, but you know what? Now people should report you. No, I like that. And I'm glad that we do have a space where we can just share some information with people. I know I told you I got that fun audition coming up. And if I don't get it, I'm posting the audition in the Patreon. So y'all can let me know what you think. But I thank y'all for supporting us on Patreon. And I love little videos of you and Wild playing with her binky. So that's all that matters. I think we should continue creating the content that makes us happy. Right, baby?
Yeah, I agree. And especially in so much of your life makes you unhappy. For example, you were like trying to edit this. You're trying to edit this documentary we've been working on about your pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And we have so many videos that you have to keep on deleting videos. And yesterday you were screaming. You're like, ah! And you're like working from downstairs. And Wild mm-hmm. was sort of looking up like very, like,
yes,
baffled.
Storage on every device we have is always like, I'm paying for extra storage. Where are they going?
Where did you learn how to yell in frustration?
For my father.
Oh,
you know, he is a professional yeller. He yells even when things are going well. Yes, my number one impression of him is,
I mean, that's not even an impression. That's just you at that this point. No. Like when I get frustrated, I get real quiet. I'm like, all right, I need to stand up and go on a walk or go on a run, maybe punch a hole in the wall.
You are a light. Well, you don't punch a hole in the wall. I don't want to alarm people out there. But you do not. You yell. Sometimes you will hit a computer or something.
Like, oh, God.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's
good
to get
that. Does anybody get frustrated and not yell? Like, I feel like there are some people who are so zen or they just, everything is so organized that they never have a reason to yell, you know, like out of frustration.
I know some yogis like that for sure. But they're screaming internally more than we are, though. I think it's good to just yell and get it out real quick. If it's like a space like your home and things like that.
What were you doing in the beginning of the intro? Were you doing like a Whitney Houston? Like,
I was still vibing on my, today I've been playing around with my Cheryl Lee Ralph impersonation, which is pretty spot on. I have
fully nailed her because she's almost kind of like my mom in that way. Yeah. It's like, everything is big and you should be the you you can be when you look in the mirror. And
she approved of your impression, right?
She did. She reposted and reshared on Twitter, which is super exciting.
It's also nice that, like, because when I make fun of you, you're pretty, like, accepting, you know, but there are moments where people get made fun of and they're like, oh, that's mean, like, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, for example, you have that comedian friend who came over, hung out. She's been, like, making fun of, like, the black man, like, Hotep podcaster.
Yeah. She's so funny. Mel Mitchell. If you have not seen her black male podcaster content, it's so good. And she's not even really making any fun of anyone specifically. But
people see themselves in her and they don't like it.
Yes. They're like, how dare you drag, you know, Charlamagne like that? And it's like, she's not even doing that, but a hit dog will holler. No, I think, obviously. It's
the most fucked up, like, phrase ever that gets the point right across.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you hit a dog to begin with? It's so mean. But it's like a Southern thing.
Yeah, it is. It's just like you throw a rock into a pack of dogs and the one that's hit.
Why are you throwing a rock in a pack of dogs to begin with? Are they wild dogs? Are they just puppies? Know. They're just puppies hanging out trying to have a good time?
Cruel, like, animal. I don't know, but okay. Well, so what can I continue or should we stop now? Mr. I don't yield. Yellow like a fool.
Yes, we can continue.
Yeah, but I think there is some level of flattery that comes with when someone does an impersonation of you and they do it well, which I definitely have. Because let me be clear. I definitely saw some people online today be like, this isn't Cheryl, this is Jennifer Lewis. No, they are very distinctly different. I want to... we're going to get to the sci-fi. But for I am really good at my impersonations, especially of, like, auntie black women because, you know, that is my plight, and I love that. But Cheryl is
definitely... It's a plight to be an auntie?
Not a plight, but my crown.
Use a better word, Amber.
My crown, my cape that I will one day wear. I'm definitely already an auntie, but Cheryl is up here where Jennifer's down here. It's a difference. And the girls, they were in their feelings about it. They're like, this isn't her. No, Cheryl is high, Jennifer's low. Cheryl's like, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and D. That's, I think I just did the letters out of order, but maybe Jennifer would do that. Did I just say E, F, D?
No, that's how the letters go, Amber.
G,
actually, you know, pedagogically speaking, teaching the alphabet in the right order of the alphabet is actually a waste of time. Like, you don't have to teach the alphabet in the order of which
really?
It's... Yeah, the data suggests that you should actually not teach the alphabet in the order of the alphabet song. You should teach it in the order of, like, sounds that make... that are easiest for children to make. So, like, mom, dad, like... So you have the O sounds, the A sound, and teach words based on that. Instead of, like, A for apple, we're going to focus on all A words, and then all B words, and all, you know, C words, or in Amber's case, all J words after B.
Did you just improvise DJ right there?
Improvise. Speaking of improvise, I've been going to improv, and that's what I've been doing, and I've been learning
specific.
A lot. No, yeah, I've taken an improv class at the Upright Citizens Brigade here in L.A., and I've been learning a lot. I actually have a really great teacher. He grew on me. It's very restrictive, the classes, and there's a very set formula, and it's like, we're not doing this kind of, we're not going to do tags, or we're not going to have more than three people scenes, and it's like, play yourself, try not to do any, like, weird character work, because it's all about learning
the basics,
the very, like, clear basics.
You know, I would hate that class.
You would be so bored. There are moments of it where I was so fucking bored. I'm like, oh my God, shoot me now. But I appreciated his approach at it, especially for beginner improv. It was nice to look at his pedagogy, but there were, like, a lot of teacher moves that, as a teacher, I was like, y'all need a whiteboard up in here. It's like, why?
Yeah, a lot of talking.
Yeah, there was a lot of talking. Like, let's move this a little bit quicker.
Pacing.
Yeah.
Segments, if you will.
And hone in on your, like, teaching point, right? And then repeat your teaching point. A lot of people will teach a class and they don't focus on, like, the teaching point and break down that teaching point. So
yeah, it's just like stream of consciousness sometimes. Yeah, you've also been going to a lot more improv shows, which I like. You've been sort of going to those on your own and just, like, letting yourself experience those and process
all alone,
and stuff.
So lonely, sitting in a
I will go with
you. In a theater by myself.
If that is a plea for me to go sober. With you, you can just say that. But the thing about it is, you typically decide that you're going to go to them the night of.
I really do it like 2 hours before.
And mama don't do that.
I have the energy. The baby's asleep. All right. I'm going. You know what I mean?
Because yeah, for sure.
It's really hard to plan things when you're a parent, especially if you're a stay-at-home parent and you're watching the kid the whole time.
Yeah.
And you're also trying to do a little bit of work as well to like think about the energy you're going to have at, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Because there's no comedy show that's early. But anyway.
It's so funny because obviously we're very tired now because we're caring for her and working for ourselves. But we were tired before too.
Yeah.
I don't think there was ever a time where we were just like,
you know, I was never tired enough to not like do some sort of comedy in Chicago. Like I always liked going to the Annoyance Theater even after a full day's work because I was working teaching that was not a lot of fun. And I was also outside already, so going and hanging out with people that I already knew and interacted with was way better. We're here, if I go and do something, I'm going to meet all new people and like all new names and all new like personal histories and all new like personal traumas and all new.
Not a trauma dump.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I get better sleep now that I work for myself. I work with you.
You're not pregnant.
I'm not pregnant. I get way better sleep now. But even before, when I was like a high school teacher, I did not sleep well at night. So I want to, I don't know, I'd never want to become one of those parents that's always like, well, you don't have kids. Do you even know what tired is? Like, because that's just not true. I was definitely like more unhealthy at a job I didn't like. And that was way harder than.
Oh, yeah. I'm not complaining. I'm just like.
Right. I don't think you're complaining. I just think our level of like, even before Wild, I would still just let you go to the Annoyance because I was so smoked from the day.
I would compare like choosing to have kids is like choosing to be an alcoholic, you know, like continue
I'm
to
sorry,
keep drinking.
What?
It's like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm so miserable. My life is so awful. It's like, well, you keep drinking. Right. And when parents are like, I have kids and I'm so tired, it's so hard to have a kid. Well, you had a kid, you know?
That is
just personal,
not
like,
great.
Just personal. Like,
wow. Speaking of greatness, yeah, let's move on.
if you want to hear great comedy, and you should definitely listen to Amber's Amp Show.
We just went tonight.
Yes. And tonight. You can like call in on Amp, talk to Amber, get some. She's basically a life coach, an auntie,
yes.
A priestess. She will help you with all your sins
by
making you feel that you have no sins.
Correct.
It's called Bad Advice with Amber. And
yes, next week we are talking about our most embarrassing moments. Do you have a moment that you were most embarrassed about? I mean, you have.
I've every week, man.
I got a pocket full of moments. A
pocket full of embarrassing moments.
What's
you know,
one
actually,
that you think of like right now?
I don't really get embarrassed, to be honest.
Yeah,
but
that's
I don't really get. I did remember in fourth grade, I did drop a violin and like break the bridge, which holds up the string. And my violin, the composer, the conductor, I really liked her. Looking back at it, I think she was like a lesbian. Now that I think of it. And the librarian, too. Now that I
she
think
was fucking the librarian?
No, I think they were just both separate lesbians.
Got it.
Because
what does this have to do with the violin that you broke?
I just remember wanting to always like impress her because she'd always like, I remember we like, I think we like watched like a drag thing or something in music class. So I remember there being like some queer stuff that she would introduce to us, especially the librarian. But anyway, I broke the bridge and she yelled at me and she never really yelled at anybody. I remember feeling a little embarrassed. So.
And now you hate lesbians. Is this where that was?
No, I actually liked it a little bit. I liked being embarrassed.
Oh.
By lesbians.
You liked?
I don't know. I'm just trying to make a joke.
He is improvising. I want to be clear. Speaking of amazing gay people.
Can you embarrass me, Amber? This week.
I think I've made a whole career doing this.
Yeah, you
but
sure
I will continue.
Just note, stop. All right.
I will continue embarrassing you. I know that's your kink. Anyway, Speaking of incredible gay people, Dr. Mick 83 wrote an Apple Podcast review, and we are happy to read it. Dr. Mick 83 writes, huge fan. Hey, Amber and Ben. I'm a huge fan of you guys. My husband and I are also an interracial couple. And let me tell you, as a black gay nerd, it was never easy. I appreciate your podcast and bringing light to so many artists and creators who sometimes never get their moment in the sun. As a black manga creator myself, did I say that right, Ben? As a black manga creator myself, have you considered branching into the comic medium? Oh, yeah. Honestly, the biggest recommendation I can give is The Antagonist, created by a black creator from a black-owned company, from a company owned by BIPOC. It's a great story and phenomenal art. Keep doing what you're doing and using your platform to help elevate others. Much love, Michael. Thank you, Michael. Awesome. Have you read The Antagonist?
I have not. I haven't even heard of it. It's not even on my radar. So
I'm excited
to go check that out. Yeah, we haven't really done comics in a while. We have done them in the past. Like, we've done Bitterroot.
We recently read Far Sector.
We read Far Sector.
Maybe a month or two ago. Maybe.
Yeah, but we haven't done any manga.
We did Killadelphia. That's not a manga.
We did Killadelphia. That was, oh man, I love Killadelphia. And then we did do an anime.
Yes, we did watched two animes. Yasuke and Cannon Busters.
Cannon Busters, same creator. But yeah, maybe we should go back and like look for a manga. I think that would be cool.
Just
to diversify the medium a little bit. So
also, Michael, please feel free to roll up in our DMs. I know you have The Antagonist here, but any other recommendations? I promise y'all, we are continuing to build a long list of things. I know as we work to finish the Africa Risen series, I know Swarm came out. That's definitely going to be on our radar. The Blackening is coming out this summer. You know, Antagonist. So we have
a remake of The Haunted Mansion is coming out.
Oh, yes. We have a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hearken back to when Ben brought this idea to me of this podcast, and I remember my first fear was that if we only cover black sci-fi and fantasy, we're going to run out of stuff to cover, like an idiot. I was an idiot. And I'm so honored that I've been proven wrong time and time again, and that we have a list of things that we are just working to get to. And I know we did not format this podcast in the best way because it literally is every week and we don't have seasons and things like that, but we're going to just continue bringing y'all black science fiction and fantasy and our personalities as we go along. So we have years and years of content to get to.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We will get to that. Speaking of content, you want to hop into what we read?
Yeah, let's jump into the stories. So the first story that we read this week was The Devil Is Us by Marette Bhagat. And this is about an antique dealer who sort of unearths ancient Egyptian artifacts and then sells them on the black market. But then he decides to fuck with the wrong conjurer who brings back djinns, and basically it becomes like a revenge story. Now, this story, all right, djinn. I love gin. I'm not talking about the drink. So in the Quran, you have angels, jinn, and humans. And humans are like of the earth, and jinn are of fire. And so it's very important. So a lot of these stories that we read, like Islam, because it is in Africa, you hear a lot of this like Islam references. So jinn are made out of fire. They get to have lives like up. They're a good jinn and they're a bad jinn.
Yes, the best example of this that the internet is giving me right now is like the genie in Aladdin.
Oh, genie, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but he's like blue. He's like blue fire.
Right, but it's still something that's not quite human, but not quite ghost.
But they can take the appearance of human. So if you ever watch American Gods.
So could the genie.
Yeah,
he could turn into sort of.
And yeah, but he was also like asexual as well. So Jin can have full sexual lives. and full, like, you know, they have power. There's various levels of them that have power. So I sort of love that, like being made out of fire.
Was he asexual in Aladdin?
Yeah, right.
I could see him getting with some other genie. I don't know, but I see your point. Okay.
Or this idea that you could be, you know, it was sort of sacrilege, like in Aladdin, right? That someone could be a human and change their essence and become a djinn. Like, that's not possible.
Got it. I feel like Jafar wanted to do that. Like,
well, no, he does.
He wanted to have the power of the genie. Right.
Yeah, Jafar, that's how they trap him. So Jafar becomes a genie, but like every genie, you are like, you have to have a master. And so he gets claps, and that's how they get rid of him. And then in the Return of Jafar, somebody finds his, you know, lamp and calls him.
Right. That was Christina. Remember Christina Aguilera? What song am I thinking of right now, Ben?
Genie in a Bottle.
Yes. Do you remember how it went?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Yeah. Sing it at home if you know it. But anyway, you know what's interesting about this story?
Well, that's, you know,
I'm a genie in a bottle, oh, baby.
Yeah, that's not the djinn of the Quran, Amber.
I know. I'm Christina so Aguilera. Sorry for those of you. I'm sorry. We started with Aladdin, and then naturally we get to Christina Aguilera. That's just how the world works.
Sort of love it.
Here's the gag about this story for those of you who read it. So the main character, what was his name again?
Abu Ammar.
Abu Ammar goes to this other woman who can talk to the djinn, right? Mm-hmm. It's not him directly. It's like a conduit, or what do you call it? The in-between? The middleman?
Yeah, sure.
A witch? I don't know.
Conjurer.
So, the conjurer. Abu goes to the conjurer, and the conjurer calls the djinn, right? The djinn will grant Abu's request, and in turn just wants 20% of Abu's earnings.
Oh, yeah. They try to, like, make a cut of it, you know.
And Abu was like, to hell with you. And I actually remember thinking, damn, the devil only wants 20%. he don't want all of it.
Yeah, not the devil. Not the devil.
Oh, the djinn.
The djinn, yeah. So I think it is really important in the paradigm of, like, djinn. Because, like, djinn are considered... You know how, like, people believe in angels? Like, Muslims believe in djinn. Like, that is like, a real thing, and they have their own separate... No, you don't have to apologize, but So, like, a djinn wanting 20% means, like, there's a level of humanness that the djinn has. Like, the genie in Aladdin would never, like, want money. He could just make money upon his own.
But he did want his freedom. So there is something that the genie did want.
He did want.
So I don't even think...
djinn are more materialistic than we... Even though they're constructed of fire, they're more materialistic.
I just don't think it was that bad of a 20% cut that he... I think the djinn was very fair about what he wanted. And Abu was like, no deal, F this. And then obviously all hell breaks loose. The djinn like burns 33 houses in the
yeah, because the houses are on top of the ancient artifacts.
Just don't think and the name of this story is called The Devil Is Us.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because it's like, so you're going to come over here asking for help from me and can't even give me a little something.
He was the treasure map. Me. He was going to tell him where all the treasures were.
And right.
He's like,
yeah.
People are greedy.
People are greedy. And I love that it was called The Devil Is... Do you have the book over there really quickly?
It's right up here.
I underlined one quote from this because it was so true. And obviously Abu was like, you're a djinn. What would you even want with this money? It's like, it don't matter. I want some sort of guarantee that you're going to remember me and cut me in. One line that really stuck out to me in this story was, if only humans knew that the devil would have no business on earth if it wasn't for their obsessions. That just really stuck out to me. Did that not resonate with you?
It did. Like, Satan can't, evil does not exist without humans.
Correct.
Yeah. So humans are the devil.
Right.
In a lot of ways.
I know that you're like not every a big zombie.
Every single zombie story, it's like the real monsters are the humans, right?
Right.
Or The Last of Us, the cordyceps are not the scariest thing. It's the humans.
Yeah, I know that you're not all about the religious stuff and things like that, but you can
resonate
that sentiment.
Yeah, I'm all about it, metaphorically.
Metaphorically, you can get down with like, yes, there'd be no... Now, what I don't like is what Christianity does. It's just like, if it wasn't for Eve, that horrible cunt, the evils of the world wouldn't exist. It's like, so
well,
I'm
that
sorry,
I actually
you...
agree with.
Now I'm like, I'm sorry. So you get to be a shit person and then trash Eve. Not right. Not right. I really enjoyed this story. I do want to say that. And I foolishly didn't think about, because this book is Africa Risen, and we have had a lot of authors from Nigeria and Tunisia and things like that. I didn't, when met with Arabic in this chapter, I remember thinking like, huh, you know, because my vision of what an Arabic person looks like is not a Black person right away. And I had to do a little bit of like,
an
I had to challenge a little bit
person,
of my thinking.
Yeah.
Yes. Because just based on like, I have not met a Black person who speaks Arabic. I know obviously
many
they
of
exist
them
in
do,
the,
yes.
like Moroccan
yeah.
people or that. So I had to just sort of challenge my thinking in that way, reading the story, which I like.
Also, for a lot of the parts of Africa that are Muslim, even though they may not speak Arabic primarily, they are reading their Quran in Arabic, right? They're saying their prayers in Arabic because Arabic is considered like the perfect language. It's like the language of God. And the Quran can only be read in Arabic, which gets the next episode, the next story we read, Cloud Mine, is also like all based in a Muslim culture.
Yeah, can I say something else about that since we're staying in the Muslim faith and identity in this section? I feel like this isn't a hot take or anything, but I feel like my only connection that I've had with Black people in the Muslim faith is Nation of Islam.
Right.
Is Louis Farrakhan.
But
and like that. So this is very, very different from
that.
Yeah,
it is very different and sort of, I guess like Saudi or I don't even know, Middle Eastern Muslims and African Muslims would not consider Nation of Islam Muslim.
Right.
They would actually, they reject them pretty intensely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Yep.
I can imagine not considering, but intense rejection.
Oh, yeah. It's there's animosity in there for sure, because Middle Eastern Muslims, African Muslims, from what I've read and who I've talked to, believe that Nation of Islam is a bastardization and completely misconstrues Islam. And in the same way, probably the Catholic Church in the beginning saw the Protestant Reformation as a complete bastardization of Christianity and like misconstruing like what true Christianity was.
But people who practice in the Nation of Islam faith also read the Quran, right? And pray to Allah. I know we have some friends who are Nation of Islam.
Yeah. But they also like hold on to their like founder pretty strongly.
Got it.
And then they also believe in like alternate history that has no basis in any like historical fact.
Okay. I didn't ask you to say all that.
But no, it's sort of like it's the same you see and I would say Christians also believe historical things that have no basis in historical fact.
Yes,
in
you
historicism,
would say that.
Right?
I,
so like,
I agree. Yeah, you're not
raising,
discriminating.
People believe that like Christ raised from the dead as a historical fact. Well, no historian would actually say that's like,
right.
Part,
no,
you know,
I know
it's
you're
a part
not
of
discriminating.
Church history,
yes.
But I'm
yes.
saying like someone who is studying history and using the methodology of like archaeology and researching, they would. They would not come to these conclusions.
Got it. Okay, let's go on move
Sorry,
to the next
yeah.
story
Sounded
before you
like
get on your soapbox.
All right, so yeah, but okay, I love Cloud Mine because there's like a plot about these people, rainmakers, who are sort of enslaved. They are given no pronouns, no names. They're sort of treated terribly, and they're forced to like make rain come. But here's what...
Yes, which is not how rainmakers have been sort of talked about in history. I feel like whenever I've heard about like rainmakers or rain dancing, it's been like Native American culture or like maybe Mesoamerican culture. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Remember that movie? I hate that I'm citing a movie, but remember that show Upload that we watched?
Oh yeah.
Or no.
Upload? I mean,
it wasn't Upload. It was Undone.
Oh, or Undone.
Yeah.
Is there a Rainmaker in
there? There's some sort of like dancer or something, I think. But yeah, those are the only times I remember having heard about
Rainmaker. It was like a sign of like respect.
Yes. So, almost like a shaman in that way.
So
yeah.
There are like two, there are people who treat Rainmakers with, we read about towns that do treat Rainmakers with respect.
Okay.
And this town doesn't.
Got it.
But what I found so compelling about reading the story is that it really makes you feel that you're in a Muslim country. So if you've ever been in a Muslim country, that was like the moment where I realized that your religion is very much based in how you're raised. So in a Muslim country, you hear the muezzin call, which is the call to prayer, you know, five times a day,
okay,
instead of church bells. You know, like there's literally a church outside our home and we hear those church bells on Sunday.
We do.
You know, but you don't hear that in a Muslim country. You hear the call to prayer, right?
Got it.
When you go in a car here, a taxi driver here, you know, they're listening to like, you know, music or whatever. But often throughout Cairo, you'll go into these taxi drivers. Instead of the cross hanging down, you know, it's the Quran. Or you'll hear the Quran being played on the radio all the time. Mm-hmm. Like it's being spoken. It's like a thing that a lot of people do. Instead of bars, there's coffee shops. And with hookah, and all the men are out there drinking their coffee. So it's just a completely different cultural experience. And yeah. You sort of get this, like you'll see people walking around carrying a mat. They're not going to yoga. They're like going to prayer. Right. And so this book sort of touches on that, which I appreciated, which I sort of want to take you to a Muslim country. It is a very like intriguing experience because you see people living completely different than the way you see people living here in the U.S., like especially being from the South, like you see the religiosity
mm-hmm.
in the same way, but just with different tools.
Yeah. I would definitely need to do a lot of like research on all of the customs and practices before I got over there with my Lao ass.
Yeah. But again, in the same way, like there's various there's like very conservative Christian countries or conservative Christian spaces, when there's very liberal Christian spaces. There's also very like Istanbul, you know, Turkey is a Muslim country for the most part, and Istanbul is, you know, Muslim, but you don't see people wearing the head coverings as much, partly because the head covering becomes like a, there's like secular Muslims and then, mm-hmm. Religious Muslims, and the head covering, tells how you vote. And so they actually banned, there's been huge attempts to like ban head coverings and such.
In Turkey.
Yeah.
There's also
in France and any place where there's a, where
that's a
yeah.
complete shift oh, the other way too, though.
Yeah, it's quite the head covering being a symbol of like your political stance is super, super interesting, and how it's being politicized in various ways, and how it's a whole thing that I used to know more about. I don't want to say more because I don't want to get things wrong, but I remember in Turkey.
You don't want to misspeak. Yep.
In Turkey, it was a huge thing. Like, if a judge wear a head covering, right? If you're a judge, right? So, I think judges in the U.S. I'm not sure if they can wear a cross around their neck, but or wear, you know, any sort of religious.
That's maybe why the high collar was introduced or something. You just never know.
Well, that was sort of the way the traditional judges were sort of like the look of the priest or the pastors, because of that direct lineage of like church being the political power and then the separation of church and state, but then holding on to certain resemblances of church power within like state structures. So mm-hmm. all fun stuff.
Yeah, what does that have to do with the Rainmaker?
I was just saying, you're on one today. It builds like it puts you in the situation of like a Muslim country.
This story.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because I had only heard about Rainmakers and rainmaking rituals in like American Indian culture, that I didn't set that landscape for myself. I just remember, I don't know. I like the idea of this town, not like the idea, but this town is in a drought and this boy's uncle goes to get the Rainmaker to like save the day. And then it basically, we learn like these Rainmakers are essentially like enslaved and being whipped, which is insane. Did you understand how this story ended?
I think the Rainmaker is going to exact revenge on the entire village, because the boy makes eye contact with the Rainmaker, because the boy in the story is like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, why are we
treating these people?
Just let them dance.
And so there's a moment where the entire village is like celebrating, and in a world where there's not a lot of rain, like when rain falls, like you're outside. You're like enjoying it.
So catching it and everything.
Like, people have their mouth open. They're just super excited. And then he locks eyes with the Rainmaker and the story just ends.
Yeah. I was like, are they all about to drown? It was my interpretation that...
Oh, that's probably how, the Rainmaker is going to like flood their village away.
It was my interpretation that the people got the water and then the boy went to sleep and everybody drowned. Is that not how you read it?
I don't remember that, but it could be.
Yeah, let me...
As he sinks into the bottom. Yeah, that I think that's right.
Right, yeah. This is just semantics, but do you like when stories do that? Yeah, it's in his dreams. Later, he is in the well with the Rainmaker again. Mm-hmm. So he goes to sleep, and then he...
Yeah, he has a dream.
He's in a well.
Yeah, I think that's a foreshadow of the Rainmaker
exacting
their revenge.
Yeah, my question is, like, stylistically, do you like when stories do that, when they're, like, left to interpretation?
It depends what kind of story you're trying to write. So, it depends if it fits that specific story. There are people who do that, and I'm like, yeah, you could have added more here.
Right. Okay, well,
did
you like it in... The reading.
Oh, where it sort of ended. Well, yeah, I feel like, no, I didn't feel like it worked in there. The reading was a movie we watched, and there's sort of a cliffhanger. You're talking about cliffhangers. Do I enjoy cliffhangers?
Cliffhangers or sort of...
Like unresolved.
It's more than a cliffhanger. It's an uncertainty about how...
Unresolved.
It's left to the audience about how it ends.
Oh, it's
or maybe like us.
Inception.
Us even does stuff like that.
Inception is like a classic example. There's a spinning top, and whether the top keeps spinning or falls at the end of the film determines like the outcome of the film. But we're left to surmise whether it keeps spinning or whether it falls. I think some people do that to be pretentious. And when it feels pretentious, I don't like it. So Inception, if you watch Inception and it's left unresolved, that felt pretentious for me. Just make a choice. There are other choices. Like in this case, the boy falls asleep. He dreams. It's a foreshadow. It's very clear the Rainmaker is going to exact revenge. So you can make it. Feel unresolved.
Right.
But put enough clues in there for the reader, the watcher, you know, the viewer, the listener, whatever to understand how it's resolved.
Got it. Yeah. I think I agree with you there, because you know me. I hate feeling stupid, and I hate feeling like I didn't read something thoroughly. And so I'll read and then be like, wait, is that it? Let me go read the page again. Like, did I miss a step where the Rainmaker did kill everybody? And we just, but I also, like you said, enjoy like, this is a short story. This is a natural close where we can infer what happens next. Okay. I was just curious stylistically, if
people,
you like that.
People, they aspire to be literary, and that's part of being literary. It's like not, it's, you know, metaphor, and you're left to, it's up to the reader to decide how it ended. But I like metaphor. I like that, but I also appreciate things that tell a clear story. And you do both, right? That's ideally.
Do both. Anyway, story number three is Story number three is Ruler of the Rear Guard by Maurice Broaddus. Have we read Maurice Broaddus before?
No, but he just wrote a novella a few years ago. It's a steampunk novella that we're going to read here and talk
What's
about steampunk. It's sitting upstairs. I forgot the name of it, but we'll get to it.
I was like, that name looks so familiar.
Yeah, I just got a book. You know, I actually bought that book from a bookstore that was doing a drag story hour for kids.
Right.
And a bunch of like assholes showed up
And, oh, for fuck's sake.
And so I saw this on the internet. It's called Buffalo Soldier.
Buffalo Soldier. Okay.
So we're going to read that. So I saw this on the internet.
And I'm sorry. Wait, let me back up. You saw this book by Maurice.
No, no. I saw the bookstore on the internet. That was
But how we get to the bookstore?
I ordered the book, Buffalo Soldier, from that bookstore.
Okay. Maurice Broaddus wrote a book and you saw that book. Oh, so you saw the bookstore first, then ordered.
Yeah, then I was like, oh, I need to read this. I want to read Maurice Broaddus because I met him briefly at the Worldcon in Chicago.
Got it. So you saw this online bookstore. It's an in-person bookstore, but you bought this book online there.
Yeah.
It's an in-person bookstore that was attacked for having drag queen story hour there.
And then to support them, I bought a book.
To support them, you bought a book.
Sci-fi side. Yeah.
Got it.
Wow.
I mean, you're the one confusing a bitch.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. That's good. I'm thank you for supporting them, and they need the support because people are trash.
Yeah, so this story, Ruler of the Rear Guard, that we read,
right.
A young woman leaves the U.S. that's been taken over basically by Trump supporters, and she goes and like to the haven of Ghana, which is such an inversion of the story we often see. It's like, you know, poor African student needs to run away from Africa and like study in the U.S. But they do a really great job of inverting this.
Yep.
And the story, Sylvain, is just so grateful. She's like, I am in a place where to be black is the norm. I am in a place where, you know, creativity is like, you know, the focus. And then at the same time, I think, the author does a good job being like, you know, don't objectify this place too much. Because, you know, they still wrestle with like misogyny or whatnot.
Colonialism. Like that.
Well, not really colonialism, because that's what she's gotten away from. That she's gotten away from this terrible America. But they still have to battle colonialism. But the story is
right.
More about,
I was like, no, let me go cite some examples.
No, she's like, you're in this country.
Right.
That is a safe haven, and you've gotten away from the problems of the U.S., but still, you're still in a country that still has to battle colonialism.
Yes.
But Ghana, in this case, has become part of like an Africa union that focuses on like mineral and agricultural wealth of Africa becoming for Africans. So it's sort of like a near, you know, future kind of story.
Yeah, I liked this story a lot, but this story definitely did not have as many sci-fi elements that I thought, like, right? There were a couple
people,
of AIs.
People leave in the U.S. to go to Ghana because Ghana is safer than the U.S. It is a pretty, like, huge science fictional idea. Like, the idea that countries can sort of invert and switch.
Right, but just, like, the actual robot and mechanics of it all, it didn't have a lot of that.
There's no, like, you know, big
or it didn't
elements.
Have a lot of fantasy. Yeah. So,
it's
I
like
remember
poly-science fiction.
Yeah, it was almost like
poly-science.
When we watched The Underground Railroad. It's
it's more of that.
Yeah, you're like, especially in those beginning episodes where it's just like, it's just a plantation where somebody's being whipped. You're like, which part is the fantastic? I'm waiting for the fantasy of it.
Or at one point you get to a point where they go to a state where they don't allow black people in the state. And you're like, wait, did this actually happen?
Yeah. It's just convincing enough, which I like. So you call that near distant future.
Yeah, probably, you know, near future. Near future science fiction, yeah.
Near future science fiction, yes. But I did still really enjoy this story, and it was like very easy to follow.
Imagine if we had to leave the U.S. because the U.S. becomes like this place of drought, and we become like the American refugees.
It almost
right?
feels like that's inevitable as American much shit immigrants. As we give refugees here.
Well, yeah, you know, every 100 years, like countries, they go up and down, right? Like, there are places where you have, like, this is the cradle, you know, Africa is the cradle of civilization, and these civilizations were great. And then it swung where, like, you know, Europe got guns, germs, and then the advantageous of, like, steel, which allowed them to, you know, produce and then colonialize. And now things will, like, pendulum swings in the realms of, like, thousands of years of human history, if we make it that long.
Yeah, I foresee or predict rather, especially in the next few decades, that that might not happen to America as a whole, but it will happen to like a couple of states. You know what I'm saying? Like Louisiana, like, Florida. Like
states attempting to, you know, secede from the United States.
Seceding, like, and fleeing from those states based on some environmental things. Like isn't Florida going to be underwater and or yeah, New York parts, or yeah, yeah.
As the, yeah, as things rise, we'll have climate refugees.
Yes, something climate that people, refugees.
Talk about from states to states.
Yeah, or especially with more like trash ass legislation, like women getting the death penalty for having abortions. Like, I don't know. I think we might see an
impact. Oh yeah, if something like that were to happen.
Right, right. Yeah, it's like if Handmaid's Tale, you're like, wait, is this foreshadowing?
You know, it is funny that you say, because in the US there are points where people have fled from towns, right? Like you have history of sundown towns.
Yeah, because the US works almost like different countries, different little countries. Like they can have different legislation and different state flags and different cultures. Yeah, it's like
you could like smoke weed in one state and then be put in prison for a few years in a different state.
Right. So it's like, what's the difference for us? But like, if over there it's like Portugal and Spain, here it's a similar energy, right?
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't the U.S. have just been little countries?
I mean, that's what they wanted. They fought a whole war over it. Some people wanted to have slaves. Other people didn't.
Right. Well, yeah. Maybe we should have been united on some of those fronts about not doing that. But, like, you know.
Well, statehood in any other part of the world means, like, country. Only in the United States where we say a state, you know, like that. Like, no, the French state or, like, the state of France, the state of Italy.
Yeah. Or what even is the difference between, like, provinces and states?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Right? Like, Canada is a bunch of provinces but not states. I don't know. I feel dumb.
Too. Read these short stories. They make you feel dumb.
They do. I was talking to a girl at a brunch recently, and she's like, I'm from Nova Scotia. I was like, that is a province of Canada, correct? She was like, mm-hmm. Like, she looked at me like, you good? I'm like, I'm sorry. But because it's not a state.
Yeah, like, it's a province.
Like, Montreal or Quebec is not a state. Well,
because a state anywhere else means its own separate country.
Got it.
Because the U.S. is this weird blend of, like, individual countries with a united front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I think the United States experiment doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Oh, well.
speaking of things that
don't... A little confusing, yeah.
So this story, Peeling Time, Deluxe Edition, I might have to reread this story, but from what I get is that you have a music like producer who creates these things called...
This was Sheree Renee Thomas, right? The author?
No.
She didn't write this story?
No.
I thought she wrote this one.
No.
Oh, got it. Apologies.
And so
is confusing.
Sorry. Let me get through the explanation first. Have this person who makes videos.
Okay.
Music videos.
Right.
But also he can like conjure the images of these music videos instantly in his head. And so he's able to produce these music videos very quickly. But also he has the ability to like snatch voices and like people's like faculties and their like image and then put them on a screen. So he can like astral project out of himself. And so he focuses on like finding women and like stealing their talent. And then producing these music videos.
Yeah, he bends kidnapped women into rap songs.
Yeah,
what does astral project mean?
It means like you like
fully glitched.
Yeah.
Let me look this up.
So, all right. But regardless, what I got from this story is that it's dangerous to work from home. Let me tell you.
Say more.
So there's this point where like the author writes, if he eliminates a workforce that sees too much, then no one will see the workings in his studio. end quote. So she goes on this whole diatribe about how, like, when you only work by your own, you can do whatever you want because you have no, like, coworkers keeping you in check.
Right.
So owning your own business and working from home will turn you into a monster. So working right. for yourself turns you into a monster.
Yes.
What do you think about that, Amber, as someone who works for herself?
I am a monster. As a monster, I want to speak for the monsters for a second. Yeah, this story was confusing. It just was. And it's written like an album almost. So it's like the intro song and then like some interludes and then the hook and then it... and then like each verse and chorus had, if for those of you who are reading this with us, please let me know what you thought of Peeling of Time. But I did like the end made sense though. So the big theme I got is that women are being kidnapped and violated and viciously raped as we move through music videos. So maybe it's a social commentary on like massage the music, noir
and the music in
rap
industry.
Music. Yes, which isn't wrong. But at the end, one of the women who were kidnapped basically like uses her stripper pole in that music video as a javelin and then throws it in the head of the guy who's astral projecting.
Right. So which I think is pretty great. He steals like part of their soul essentially and like puts them inside this video.
Yeah.
So like they still
they
still go and live.
Like, maybe it's like Get Out.
Yeah, oh, maybe like he's still that there's
where
still
you can,
an
like,
essence
force
of that person.
You in the sunken place, and yes, and there's still an essence of them.
Yeah.
But they're not dead.
Yeah, it's also weird. There's this weird scene where he has sex with a woman in real life, but his semen ends up like destroying her womb.
Yeah, it got really trippy.
It's a bizarre story. I think I reread parts of it, and the reread made more sense. I was like, okay, most of this is like a spiritual realm, and he's able to like use, he calls it his trauma. He uses his trauma to, you know, like download things into a computer.
Is astral projecting like everything everywhere all at once, where you can sort of like do a combo of moves to be like in another state in your mind?
No, that's more of like they talk about traversing different universes. Traveling.
Ciao.
Man. No, astral projection is, imagine if I were to close my eyes and then like send my spirit outside of my body, and now I'm like traveling around in this earth, on this earth.
Got it. Like the one-eyed
or think
raven,
of like stars.
Raven?
Yeah, that's, well, those are more visions. Those are more visions. Astral projection is like this, like I close my eyes right now and I send my body off and I get to look at the stars right now. Like I'm in the sky in space and I see the satellites, or I project myself out and I get to spy on people.
Got it. Yeah. It's like this author had like acid trip.
Undone story. Has like elements of astral projection.
Yeah, I like that. It's very hard to follow this story at first. Wouldn't you agree?
It was.
Yeah. I do enjoy the social commentary on women in rap and stuff like that, because I actually just recently interviewed two women in sort of the music industry, and it was just interesting talking to them, especially about some of the things about.
It's like a man. Do they talk about it being a male dominated?
Yeah, I asked them questions about that. And one of the women especially, she kind of answered like, I haven't really faced any challenges being a woman in a male dominated field. And then she proceeds to be like, well, except for these people that tried to fuck me a couple times. But like, so it was interesting sort of hearing how jaded and used to that she
like,
is.
Oh, she's this like, is not a problem. Like,
yeah, she wasn't even saying like this is not a problem. She was just saying like nothing unique to this industry has happened to me because I'm a woman. Things have happened to me because I'm a woman, but that's not unique to music in this industry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, which was interesting, right?
No, that sounds about right.
She'll be like, yeah, because she was like, I haven't really faced any struggles with being a woman in this industry. I mean, obviously, like, I've been told to wear different clothes while doing my job, but, you know.
I think, you know,
but to me, that's like, that. No, that's a problem.
This story does this really fucked up thing where oftentimes we're told, like, you know, we can't be prisoners in our own mind. You know, I'll always be free because my mind will always be my own, right? There's this line in like Star Wars and Andor, you know, this person's like, the Empire will never, you know, imprison me because I will always be free in my mind. But when you have someone who can astral project and like get into your whole essence, into your very being, then like nothing is safe. Even the mind can be colonized, right? And I think this story is dealing with like mind colonization
and brainwashing
and cultural erasure.
Yeah. So I love how this story is so unique. Even though it was a little bit confusing for us, I'm glad that we read it, because this is the kind of stuff, this kind of astral projection is the stuff that allows me to have more compassion and understanding for people who have been victims of brainwashing. Whereas I think a lot of people, when people tell their stories of like how they joined this cult and now that they're out of it and all these things that happen, obviously everybody's go-to is like victim blaming and like, oh, you're just stupid. You just ignore the red flags. But they underestimate people's ability. Like, I don't think people are astral projecting in real life, but I do think there are some highly, highly intelligent human beings on this planet that are able to like fuck with people's minds in that way.
And
that
also find vulnerable people at vulnerable points in their life, right?
Yes. So like, and there's the visual always that moments. I have for that, what they're doing is now astral projection.
Yeah, they're like literally getting into your mind.
Yes. And you see that happening, especially if you're somebody who's still like in, like they prey on the people who are in the stage of like still figuring things out. And we've all, in a way, fallen victim to something similar. Like, maybe it was a small scam or whatever. But, like, I think when you find yourself, like, giving all of your money to a church or something like that, you're kind of like, this preacher might be, like, astral projecting. There's so many points of contact.
You say that because when I was growing up, our youth pastor would teach us that, like, it's really important for us to evangelize to youth because, you know, most people, like your chances of becoming saved, you know, drop 75% once you're out of high school. And so there's like,
what? Your youth pastor told you?
Yeah.
Was it rooted in some actual stats?
So there's this guy, I think Barnum or something, but most conversions happen before
P.T.
like,
Barnum?
No,
as
no,
in a
George
sucker
Barnum,
board every minute.
Somebody else. He's like a famous Christian statistician.
As in Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Barnum and Bailey
Circus. That makes sense. I'm just kidding.
Barna. I think it's actually Barna, George Barna.
Okay.
But he, a Christian statistician. But I think that basically your chances of becoming saved drop significantly once you're out of high school. And so that was told to us, and so like the importance of like churches putting lots of money into youth groups, lots of money into like youth outreach. But the fucked up thing is like, it's that way because youth are vulnerable. So you're actually like preying on the weak minded to like convert, which is so fucked up.
Yeah. But the visual now I have in my mind is
astral projection.
Is astral projection.
Like getting into people's
mind. Even like pyramid schemes. Like I love when a documentary gives a visual of like the mind of the one person then webbing out and or like pyramiding and trickling down. And I'm like, yep,
it's manipulation.
That's how they got. And then, the next episode is about how they all then branded their bodies. I'm like, damn, this is fucked up. Next episode. You know what I'm saying? That's why you can't pick on me now that I'm watching Next in Fashion.
I feel like, don't like some fraternities do branding?
Hell yeah.
Wow. Is that like a form of
respect and
like group think or
I don't know, because I'm speaking on because I do obviously AKA does not do any kind of branding, but
yeah, you have an AKA brand that I don't know
and
about.
And it's so funny because even when you join AKA, they are hyper vigilant about saying, please do not get any tattoos that like symbolize your commitment to the sisterhood.
Why not?
We know you're committed. That is not what we do. Just because like that level of like I don't know. I honestly think they warn against that for like litigious reasons. Cause I could see somebody being like, you know, my big sister told me to like get this tattoo or whatever. You know, it might just be like them
Why your big sister told you to get that?
I think they're trying to avoid any sort of hate. No. Yes.
Man, I am
and
so
your big sister in the sorority.
Sororities are
any,
so
any form
like,
of like hazing.
Sororities
stuff.
Are like a magic system for
yeah,
me.
It is a magic system
that I don't understand.
Anything that could be potentially considered hazing, they do not want you to get.
So if you're lying, if like everyone was forced to get a tattoo, you're like,
yes.
You're spending money on this permanent thing. Okay.
Right. And that's like proof now that they were all forced
to do it.
But
like fraternities do it.
Now, here's the thing. This is what I was going to say. Especially with I've seen brands on either Kappas or Omegas. Even when brands happen, some people get it, some people don't. Some people want to get it, some people don't. It is my understanding that like everybody doesn't have to get it. So,
do you do it? I mean,
I think my brother might have gotten branded too. He's a Sigma.
Yeah, this is sure. It's.
But
so,
I don't think everybody on his.
It feels
line
very did. Culty to me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's also a level of like. Cultish stuff aside, because it only typically happens with men, there's something very like
masculine.
Yeah, there's some very machismo and hyper masculine. Yeah,
well, that's
it's not
me.
So much like you said what, Ben?
That's not me.
Not me. I love you. But yeah, there's something very like let's hype ourselves up and get this tattoo or get this brand. Like I don't think it's rooted in like
damn.
I care so much about this frat. I think it's rooted in like, look how much.
Well, yeah, and frats don't have like, you know, psychos like this, the main character in Peeling Time Deluxe.
Right. Yeah.
Who's sort of like the leader, right? Because, you know, fraternities, they have turnover, right? Someone's not going to be in a fraternity for 7 years. I mean, maybe, but like.
Yeah. That's not that
like well, they're in school, right? And so
yeah, but you can do grad chapter.
Oh yeah,
you can be a general member.
Yeah. So you stay involved, but you're not the fraternity, the sorority part of it is really those 4 years of college, right?
Yeah, yeah. Those are the most active, most heavy. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's not like a continuous thing. Like now, stay here with us and come.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, not living quarters.
And come celebrate, you know, Shabbat with us on like. The Saturday and keep the, seventh
the
day
okay,
Adventist. Or, well, right. Actually, there's a whole fringe group of like Christians who believe in, I shouldn't say fringe, but there is an element like where they don't have any music in church and they only celebrate the Sabbath on Saturday. And if you celebrate on Sunday, you're wrong. They're called Seventh Day Adventists.
Got it. Ooh. But they have brands, yes.
Well, no, but. You know, little like culty things. But if you were to combine that with like branding and then like meeting together all the time and.
I mean, we're just so like because we're human and we gather like that's a part of our DNA. Like cults are just inevitable. Like, don't you think?
Yeah.
Cults
well,
are
you
like
have charismatic
groups are,
leaders.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because you have you. Yeah. You have like individual psychos who do, I shouldn't say psychos, but individuals. I guess I'm talking psycho in like the term of like literature, right? Like the psycho
literature,
or like you know film. You have the psycho film, or you have the individual who goes rogue, who like kills people, or in this case, you have the individual who collects people's.
By astral projection.
Yeah,
I cannot get enough of that word. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's the colonization of like body parts and like, you know, making weird stuff. And then there's the inverse of that where you have the villain who is like, I'm going to collect people's like mind and I'm going to collect and hold on to them as like a group. And I want to be a leader. And I always, out of the two being the most scary, I always fear the people who are charismatic and they look like they're doing something good for you. Mm. Like those are the scarier people, you know, the Jeffrey Dahmers in the world
people
are not
think that about
scary.
Influencers.
Yeah. They're not. Yeah. I mean, we have a
didn't
cultic
Malcolm
word
Malcolm
following.
X. Yeah. Follow it. Yes.
Following. That's
oh,
like a,
my God.
Our followers. We even refer to them as followers. Like we're fucking Jesus.
Yeah. That's why. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I feel
we asked them for money.
We have supported us. We
oh
did
my
that
God,
at the top of
cult?
The show. That's what I'm saying.
Holy shit!
I think it was Malcolm X. Malcolm X said, like, he who controls the media controls the mind, right?
Yeah.
Social media. That's where the dollars are.
Yeah, I think other people have said that before, probably, too.
But let's give it to Malcolm, though.
I think Hitler might have said that, too.
Oh, that's fun. Did he?
I'm pretty sure.
Not me quoting Hitler. No, wait. I got to look it up. I mean, he wasn't wrong with that, though.
He who controls the media controls the mind. Or, Morrison.
Thank God. Yeah.
I think Hitler said something about, like, the youth. He who controls the youth controls
sure,
the mind. Oh, yeah, because there was that... There was that politician who quoted Hitler, and like the importance of educating children.
Got it. Like your youth pastor.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, so just to be clear, let's retort. Whew. I did not quote Hitler on this good podcast this evening. You want to get out of here so we can spend some time together?
Yeah, let's hang out. Thanks for listening if you made it to the end.
Oh my gosh, please text me. DM me if you made it to the end of this podcast.
We're kicking it.
You're not Hitler, girl. We still love you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love you.
You may not be Hitler, but you're...
No, let's just not. Because I don't want it to end poorly. Let's just not. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Sci-Fi Side Podcast. Up next, we are going into week 5 of Africa Risen. So we got 8 weeks of Africa Risen. I'm so excited. Like, look at this big ass book. We are halfway through it. So please make sure you read the next 4 short stories after Peeling Time. I think the name of the next story is The Sugar Mill. Okay. Ben told me, Amber, don't read every single story. The Sugar Mill. That's the next one. And then read the 3 after that. So the next 4 short stories. And we will see y'all next week for the show.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large 2-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.